Welcome, Sharon.
Hello, everyone. welcome to the Guiding Light. It's Wednesday, and we're here for the Guiding Lights. And today, we're going to begin looking at NTI 1 Corinthians chapter 15 on page 304. But I just noticed a question in email about last week's teaching, or that comes from last week's teaching. So I thought what I would do is begin first by reading that question and responding to that, and then we'll move on to the music and NTI 1 Corinthians chapter 15. So let me read the email. It says, "Hi, Regina. I was a little disturbed when I listened to your recent chapter 14 part 1 audio." So this would have been 2 weeks ago then. "I was a little disturbed when I listened to your recent chapter 14 part 1 audio when you didn't move to a new location because you realized that where you were must be where you were supposed to be. Now, I know you, of all people, have been open to guidance and have made many changes in your life, location, and otherwise, based on being open to where the spiritual path led you. So I guess my real question is, how did you know this time that your urge to move to a new location was ego-based? And on a broader level, how does one know when he is listening to guidance and when it's the ego?" So I just felt like that was an excellent question. And since it had to do with the Guiding Light teaching, I thought I would just answer it here. First of all, just a bit of background for those of you that don't know what the question is referring to. Recently, I was enamored with La Vida, Colorado, which is about 70 miles south of my house. You may have heard me refer to it also as the Spanish Peaks, because the two mountains that are down there are called the Spanish Peaks. And in fact, they're the mountains that I can see off of my back deck. So I like to sit on my back deck and look at the Spanish Peaks, and always have. And recently, we have kind of centered our search for an Awakening Together retreat house in the La Vida area. And the reason for that is several of us, since starting last September, several of us have visited down there, and we just all feel the same way about the location. We just feel really inspired there. We think it's gorgeous, and you know, it just kind of opens the heart, and like, this is where we want our retreat house to be. So we're looking there. Right now what we're doing is we're looking for land. And in fact, I'm going down there again tomorrow to look at land. So I've made several trips to La Vida as a result in the last 2 months. And my mind created a fantasy. And in fact, this is a part of the answer to the question. The question was, you know, how did you know this time the urge to move to a new location was ego-based? And the way that I really knew is where the urge came from. Notice those words were, my mind started to create a fantasy. And the full fantasy, as my mind created it, I'm not going to hide a thing. I'm just going to tell you, and I've probably told you before, I think I may have brought this up in a weekly gathering, but I'm just going to tell you exactly what the mind was saying. In La Vida, there are some small houses. There was one in particular that I was attracted to, a two-bedroom house with a office off the master bedroom for $155,000. Very inexpensive. And my mind started creating this fantasy of me selling everything, leaving basically my family. You know, my daughter's already in college, so that, you know, she's kind of on her own anyway, leaving my boyfriend, going down there alone and starting a life of, you know, in the fantasy, it was basically a life of seclusion, a life of just meditating, taking walks, enjoying the beauty, kind of escaping it all. And in fact, escape was a big part of the energy of the fantasy, escaping, like there's something wrong with this life that I have now. There's something wrong with my job as the president minister of Awakening Together. There's something wrong with, you know, with being in a relationship with Ron. There's something wrong with living here in Pueblo. And those were all hints that it was ego. The fact that the mind started the fantasy in the first place. If you really look at the fantasy, it's completely selfish. Right? It had no concern for anyone else. This is what I want. And it judged the current situation as completely wrong. That's how I knew it was ego. The person who wrote to me is correct in that I have made significant changes. You know, I left a job. I moved from the Massachusetts area to North Carolina by guidance, and then from North Carolina to Pueblo. And at one point, I did let go of Ron for that relationship with Laurent. So I guess the question is, how did I know that those things were guidance and that this wasn't? Part of it is a lot harder to describe because it's really the feeling. Like I said, I knew this was birthed in the head. I knew this was birthed in the mind. When that guidance came, asking me to leave my job and move eventually to North Carolina in the very beginning, that had nothing to do with my head. In fact, my head was completely afraid of that guidance. My head was, you know, like this job is my safety and security. What's going to happen when I, you know, leave my job and move? You know, this feeling to go to Levada, remember I said it was escaping as if this life was wrong. Something was wrong with this life. That original guidance to leave my job and move, was the opposite of escaping. It was like, but what I have now is security. Why would I want to leave what I have now, which is secure, for something unknown and mysterious? You know, so the feeling of it was just completely different. In fact, even when the guidance came to move to Pueblo from North Carolina, which you guys may remember came in a dream, but I recognized it as guidance. Again, I was completely happy where I was at. You know, I felt safe and secure and fine there. And when the guidance came to move to Pueblo, I didn't know anything about Pueblo. You know, I started looking it up on the internet, and you know, I immediately felt sad because what I noticed is there wasn't trees or grass here. I liked trees and grass, and you know, it didn't come from me. And I was afraid also. I was afraid of the cost of moving. At that point, I only had $10,000 left, and I still was not yet receiving donations back then. I thought, this is going to take my last ten. That my feeling was, I was actually angry at God temporarily. My feeling was, you know, you're going to make me move to Pueblo. You're going to take my last $10,000, because that's how much it's going to take to move there, and then I'm going to get there and be screwed, right? So there was no sense of escaping. In fact, it took great, great trust, great, great trust to follow that guidance. Also, when I received the guidance to move, to quit my job and move to North Carolina, there was no plan. It was a complete unknown. Now, as it turns out, you know, in North Carolina, that's where NTI was written, that's where Inner Ramana was written, but I didn't know that in advance. There was no plan. There was just go, right? Just that feeling, go. Same thing with coming to Pueblo. I didn't know anything about Pueblo. I didn't know anything about what was going to unfold when I got to Pueblo. There was no plan. It was just go. And with this feeling to go to Levada, there was this whole plan. You know, I'm going to go here, and this is what life's going to look like, and I'm going to get away from this. And you know, so it was just completely different. And so I suppose if someone is asking, in fact, the last part of this question was on a broader level, how does one know when he is listening to guidance and when it's ego? I don't think, you know, based on my experience, guidance, you know, unless you consider awakening itself to be something better, guidance doesn't promise something better. Guidance doesn't promise a better job, a better lover, a better place to live. You know, guidance doesn't look at the world and say, oh, you'll be happier in this situation. That's ego. Guidance has its own reasons for moving you about, right? But it's not, you know, where you are is not good enough. Going here is going to be better. That thought process itself is always ego. And again, guidance, in my experience, never gives, you know, an entire plan laid out. It gives one step at a time. And when you take that step, there's this feeling of you don't know why you're doing it. And the only way to find out why is to do it. Like if you don't, in fact, that was why I originally followed the guidance to quit my job and move to North Carolina, is because I knew if I didn't, I'd always wonder what would have happened if I had. And I had to find out what would happen. So with guidance, there's not this whole plan. You don't have this personal vision of what it's going to look like. It's an unknown. It's a mystery. And to find out, you have to follow. The question now that I'm receiving on the board is, what about signs? Did you receive any signs that you were going in the right direction? I suppose in my case, and I'm not certain this would always be true in everyone's case, so don't take this as a rule. But in my case, I have always had the support of my family. You know, even if they didn't understand it, there was support there. You may remember even the one that Ron could understand the least was when I broke up with him for Laurent. And what you guys might remember is what Ron said. He said, you know, when I explained to him that I was not breaking up with him because I was unhappy with him, but that I, you know, that I wanted to achieve enlightenment in this lifetime and that this relationship with Laurent had something to do with that, Ron's response was, well, if this is God, I know God loves me too, and so you'll be back, and I'm going to wait for you. And in fact, the entire time I was with Laurent, he was kind of there in the background. You know, he sent like money at Christmas. Laurent and I made a couple trips together, and Ron would take Jasmine for the week and watch Jet. There was always support from Ron, even in that. So one thing that I've noticed is somehow, and again, I'm not sure this would always be true with everyone, but somehow I've always had the support of my family as long as I'm following guidance. And trust me, there was no support on the idea to go to La Vida. That was, you know, so, but somebody else's signs may be different, right? I think that if we're absolutely honest with ourselves, we know the difference between guidance and what we're making up. I think that the reason sometimes people don't know the difference between guidance and what we're making up is because we want what we want, you know? And so we pretend like we don't know the difference, you know? Like if I wanted to move to La Vida, I could have maybe lied to myself. I'm not that as good at lying to myself as some people are, but I could have maybe lied to myself and pretended like it was guidance and made it happen, but it wasn't. And I knew it wasn't. Everything about it, the thumbprint was ego, not spirit. Everything about it was different. I had to escape to a better life, which is not true. There's nothing wrong with this life I have. I just slipped and listened to ego for a couple of weeks. And then, you know, saw what I was doing and let it go. So hopefully that answers the question. One thing that I recommended in a gentle healing group recently was that one way that you can make sure that you're always following guidance is just to be happy. If you're happy where you are, if you're happy with your job, happy with your family, happy with your house, happy with, you know, your financial situation, and you're not looking for change, and then guidance comes in to change something, you'll know it was guidance because you'll know you weren't looking to change anything. You'll know that you chose to be happy right where you're at. So that's my recommendation. And again, if that thought is you're seeking something better, that's ego. All right. So with that said, then, what I am going to do is play a song. And the song that I have picked out is called The Voice Within, and it's Christina Aguilera.
Tears will dry, you'll soon be
Okay. That's kind of an abrupt ending, but it's a nice song about listening to the voice within. I love the way it ends. Listen. Listen. Okay, I notice Hal is continuing to have pal talk troubles. So this is why, you know, whenever there's an opportunity to upgrade something, I usually avoid upgrading for as long as I can. It always seems to create new challenges. So, but eventually we have to upgrade. all right, so I'm going to begin reading today NTI 1 Corinthians chapter 15 on page 304 in NTI. Let me remind you of the simplicity of what I request. I do not ask you to judge which thoughts are to be laid down and which thoughts are to be kept. For such a request would keep you busy and stuck with an illusion for an eternity. I ask you to willingly lay down everything but your trust. This is why the symbol of an empty shell is given. Keep nothing but the casing, which is trust. In this way, you hold on to nothing that blocks out truth. And truth may be freely given and freely welcomed as it is received. So what... almost dropped the book. I would have been able to find my page again, but didn't want to drop it. I caught it. Caught it. Dropped it and caught it. what this paragraph really reminds me of is what I'm going to call the task in awareness, watching, awareness, meditation. You know, people often ask me, what is the difference between meditation and contemplation? And again, one thing I have to say is, you know, different people use those words differently. So these definitions apply to when I'm speaking, and they may not apply when somebody else is speaking. But for me, contemplation is about being open to right-minded thought. So, you know, when I am contemplating A Course in Miracles or NTI or the Seven Steps to Awakening, I am open for some kind of enlightened clarity or enlightened realization to come into the mind. For example, this morning I contemplated for quite a while the workbook lesson that we're on today. I think the number is 136. But it's the lesson is that is sickness is a defense against the truth. And I spent a lot of time contemplating that lesson. And if you have read my tip that I posted in Facebook today, you'll notice the results of the contemplation was that my mind was tuned in to focus on the defense portion of the lesson rather than the sickness portion of the lesson. And a lot of great clarity came about how we do choose our defenses against truth. And so, you know, that's being open to receive thought. And that's what I call contemplation, open to receive right-minded thought. For me, meditation is different. Meditation is letting go of all thought. It's letting go of everything. If I am in meditation and thoughts start coming into the mind about my defenses against truth, I turn my attention away from those thoughts as soon as I notice that I've, you know, leaked into paying attention. Meditation is not a time that I'm open to any kind of thought. Meditation is a time when I am purely focused on awareness, awareness, watching, awareness. And that is the only thing I do, and I let go of all thought. And so when I read NTI 1 Corinthians chapter 15, what I'm reminded of then is this is talking about meditation. And in fact, listen to this. Let me remind you of the simplicity of what I request. I do not ask you to judge which thoughts are to be laid down and which thoughts are to be kept. For such a request would keep you busy and stuck with an illusion for an eternity. I ask you to willingly lay down everything but your trust. I ask you to willingly lay down anything but your trust. And without trust, we probably wouldn't stay in meditation. Doubt would take over. So trust does seem, trusting that this is worth my time, that this is leading somewhere, that progress is happening, even though I may not be aware of progress. You know, lots of trust, at least for me, is needed in order to spend the time in meditation that I do. So that's what this is speaking about. In our daily life, for example, we can't lay down all thought. You know, thought is required to operate as a human. I mean, Hal asked us a second ago, right? Hey, I just upgraded to the new Pal Talk and, I don't have any sound. Does anybody have any ideas? And, a couple of us put in some ideas. You know, there's some thought there, a little bit of troubleshooting going on to see if we can get Hal operating in Pal Talk now that he's upgraded, right? So, thought happens in life, but in meditation, in awareness, watching awareness, we want to lay down all thought. And I'll tell you a little bit more. One of the things that I've learned both from the two people that have taught me this are Michael Langford and Ramana Maharshi. The two of them have taught me this. I don't know that I've actually heard anybody else speak it, but that's okay. Michael Langford and Ramana Maharshi are enough for me. What they have taught me is to not pay attention to anything except awareness, or the way Ramana Maharshi words it is the self, except the self, when in meditation. And actually, Muji has taught this too, so three teachers, Muji, Ramana Maharshi, and Michael Langford, I've heard teach it. What they teach is that when in meditation, there are experiences that can come that seem quite divine. And, it could be what seems like an incredible mystical experience. And probably the average meditator will think, wow, I just really got somewhere in my meditation. This divine being came to me and spoke to me, or I had this vision, this incredible vision of something happening or whatever. And wow, my meditation is really paying off. But what Ramana Maharshi and Michael Langford and Muji teach is that actually those experiences come in meditation from the ego in order to get attention turned away from the self and back in the outward position. So you're looking outward at a vision rather than backwards to awareness. And what's really funny about this is since I started practicing awareness, watching awareness meditation, something like this has only happened to me once. And the funny thing is, what happened was I was in meditation, and all of a sudden, it must be kind of like a near-death experience in the way that I experienced it, because I suddenly was traveling down this long tunnel, just very quickly. I traveled down this really long tunnel, and when I popped out of the tunnel, I was in a little cave. And in that cave sat Ramana Maharshi. He had his back to me. And there were probably, five or six devotees sitting in a circle. There was a little fire lit so they could see each other's faces in the cave. And I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt, this was like an intuitive knowing, that I could approach Ramana Maharshi sitting in that circle. And I could ask him anything I wanted to ask him. And he would answer me. And then I remembered the instruction to ignore everything but awareness. And I turned my attention back to awareness, and the vision disappeared. I I said that Ramana Maharshi teaches this as well. And in fact, I might grab The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss in a moment and read to you all from it, if I can find it. It might be all the way upstairs. You know, it's funny because I don't sit in just one place. If I sat in just one place all the time, all my books would be there. But sometimes I sit down here in my office. Sometimes I sit upstairs. You know, so my books are like scattered all over the house. So we'll see if there's one within reach. But let me tell you about how Ramana Maharshi taught this. Ramana Maharshi had an attendant named Kunju Swami. And, you know, Kunju Swami attended to Ramana Maharshi for many, many, many years. You could say he was his closest companion. But at some point, Kunju Swami asked if he could leave and go to a cave and practice self-inquiry full-time, which self-inquiry in the way that he would practice, it would be the same as awareness, watching, awareness, meditation. And, of course, Ramana gave him permission to do that. So Kunjun Swami went to a cave and he began practicing. And I don't know how long he was there. I could probably look it up. I don't know if it was days, weeks, months. You know, I don't know how long he was there. But he was there for, you know, some time and was very focused on meditation. And at some point, he had a vision. And in his vision, he saw a temple burning, a particular temple burning, one that he could have told you the name of the temple, a particular temple burning. And later that day, some visitors came to the cave where he was sitting, and they told him that this temple had burnt down. And he went, wow, I saw that. I saw that in meditation, and it actually happened. And he was so excited that he had kind of achieved this ability to see things, you know, that were happening that weren't right in his presence. And so he ran down the mountain to tell Ramana Maharshi about the success he had achieved in meditation. And Ramana Maharshi was not at all impressed. In fact, Ramana Maharshi felt like he had missed the point of self-inquiry entirely and recommended that he go back to being his attendant. Because he was too excited by something that was not the truth, too easily swayed by something that was not the truth. Yay, Hal has audio. Yay. Muji tells the story in this way, and again, I may not tell the story exactly correct, but you can look it up on the internet if you want to look it up. You just look up Muji Yogini, or the story of the Yogini, and you'll find it. But Muji tells the story about a yogini, which is a female yogi, who was meditating, practicing self-inquiry. And I don't remember the exact order of how things happened, but one of the things that happened was this incredible melody came to her in her meditation. And the melody was just, it was otherworldly. It wasn't like any kind of music you ever hear in the world. And at first she was like, ah. But then, like me, with the image of Ramana Maharshi in the cave, you know, how I remembered to turn my attention away from the vision and back to awareness, watching awareness, she remembered the same thing. And so she says, who is it that hears this music? And she turns her attention back to awareness, watching awareness, and the music goes away. And then a little later, she starts seeing these incredible colors, incredible, incredible colors. In fact, again, they're otherworldly. They're not even like colors in the world. So it's something that the eyes have never even seen. And at first she's like, ah! And then she remembers and she says, who is it that sees these colors? And she turns her attention back to awareness, watching awareness. And then the next thing that happens is some beings come to visit her. And, you know, divine beings of light. And at first she's like, ah. And then she remembers. And she says, who is it that sees these beings? Turns her attention back to awareness and awakens. So that's the way that Muji tells the story. Let me just take a quick break to look around my office and see if I have a copy of The Direct Means to Eternal Bliss down here. I think it's upstairs. Tell you what, you guys entertain yourself for about 30 seconds. I'm going to run upstairs and get it. I'm pretty sure it's upstairs by my chair. The good news is this shows that I actually read these books, because the books I don't read are all neatly packed in my bookshelf. the books I do read are spread all over the house. And yeah, it's not in YouTube, Cheryl. You do have the correct spelling, but it's not an audio. It's a typed up story. So just search Amazon or Google for Muji and the story of the yogini, and you'll find it that way. But you do have the correct spelling. All right, let me find what I want to read here. Let's see. I think I'm in the right section. Yes, I'm in the right section. I opened right up to it, so something is very supportive of me reading this to you. So this is in, I have the green cover of the Direct Means to Eternal Bliss. I also have the black cover around here somewhere. But this is in Chapter 14 of the Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, which is about experiences, the journey, and the final goal of awareness, watching, awareness, meditation. So I'm just going to read to you from Experiences. He says, there are trillions of possibilities regarding what you might experience while engaged in spiritual practice. Almost everything you experience during your spiritual practice should be ignored. Some notable exceptions are if you have symptoms of a heart attack, such as chest pains, etc., you should stop practicing and immediately call an ambulance. If your smoke detector sounds its alarm, you should stop practicing and make sure there is no fire in your house. With the exceptions of those events, which are an emergency or extremely urgent, almost everything else in the environment, the body, the inner experience, and the inner experience should be ignored during your practice sessions. So, of course, he just picks a couple of examples, but basically what he's saying is, you know, you don't have to abandon your common sense, right? If there might be a fire in your house, it is, you don't have to sit there and go, I cannot leave meditation, I cannot leave meditation. It's okay. It's okay to leave your meditation and, you know, call the fire department. Right? So you don't have to abandon your common sense. But I will tell you from my own experience that the mind will try to make up emergencies that aren't real, and you have to have some kind of ability to notice the difference. For example, I have been meditating outside, and the mind starts making up there might be a rattlesnake nearby. You know, I think I heard some kind of a sound that might have been a rattlesnake crawling nearby. I better look. When actually there was no reason, you know, there wasn't a rattling sound. There was no reason to really think that. It was just the mind, and it's just the temptation to open the eyes and look. And in the beginning, I would fall for those kinds of things, but of course they were never true. And so I finally got to where I just ignored them. And another thing I also did was I used to try and meditate in what I thought were cool places, like, you know, sitting outside. I decided, you know what, I actually get more distracted. I just meditate inside, you know, I do meditate almost 100% of the time in my office, although I read all over the house. Almost 100% of the time I meditate in my office, in that chair, with the doggy door open so Jamie can go in and out as she wants. But, you know, there's really not the chance of a mountain lion walking up on me or anything like that. Because when I go sit in the mountains about where it's a really cool place, then those other thoughts do appear. So one way that I protect myself from thoughts that might distract me from meditation that are really just made up is by meditating in a pretty secure environment, you know. But again, his point is, if it does seem like there's an emergency going on in the external environment that you should respond to, then that's one of the things you do not need to ignore. But other than that, he says again, almost everything you experience during your spiritual practice should be ignored, with the exceptions of those events which are an emergency or extremely urgent. Almost everything else in the environment, body, and inner experience should be ignored during your practice sessions. The goal is to perceive the seer. Almost any experience you have, including those you consider to be spiritual experiences, are the seen and not the seer. They are the perceived, not the perceiver. Therefore, they should be ignored. Experiences can be created from the power of suggestion. Two different spiritual groups who, as part of a spiritual teaching, are taught that they can expect two different kinds of spiritual experiences will tend to have experiences that match what they have been told to expect, even if they are practicing the same method. This is an example of the power of suggestion. This is also an example of the power of illusion. It should not be a surprise to you that the mind can create an experience from the power of suggestion, since it is now presenting the illusion to you that there is a planet called Earth when there is, in fact, no such planet. The same principle applies to the universe, etc. Give people a list of the signs of spiritual progress, and the mind can create such experiences. Unless the ego wants them to move on to a different practice or teaching, in which case the ego may be unwilling to produce such experiences. Whatever you experience during spiritual practice, ignore it and turn your attention away from it and towards the background of awareness. Turn your attention away from the seen and towards the seer. Turn your attention away from the known and towards the knower. Turn your attention away from the heard and towards the hearer. You may experience a place, a realm, or another dimension. The place may have entities in it. It may seem to be the most wonderful, loving, beautiful place you have ever seen. Ignore it. All realms, all places, all dimensions, and all entities are temporary illusions. The reality is not a place and has no places in it. Thus, even if you manage to live what seems like a trillion earth years in what seems to be a beautiful, wonderful realm or place, it will come to an end. Then you will be right back in the cycle of births and deaths. For example, 100 million imaginary lifetimes of suffering in realms that are not pleasant. There may be entities in the beautiful realms that try and convince you that those realms are eternal. Don't believe these entities. No place is eternal. No realm is eternal. All realms and all places had a beginning in time and will have an end in time. Keep in mind that you may never experience any realm or place or entity. That which is temporary is not the goal. That which is temporary will not free you from sorrow. With any temporary experience, including a very blissful experience, you will end up right back where you started from, with suffering. Temporary happiness, temporary bliss, temporary love, or temporary peace will not free you. A temporary experience will not free you. A temporary entity or place may seem to help. However, in the end, they will not have produced any real help. It is best to ignore all that you experience during spiritual practice by turning your attention away from the experience and towards the experiencer. And that's the end of that particular section of this chapter. And if I remember correctly, it's worded slightly different in the black book, but basically the idea is the same. And in fact, I have another book. It is on my bookshelf because I haven't read it in years. it's a book that I read because, here it is though. It's a book that I read once called No Mind, I Am the Self. It's written by David Godman, and it's about two different sages, Sri Lakshmana Swami and Mathru Sri Sarada. And Sri Sarada was the student of Lakshmana Swami. And I don't remember the details now because I really haven't read this book in many years. But I do remember that Sri Sarada had some kind of an experience in meditation where Shiva, it seems like, came and invited her to live with him in another realm. That would be like maybe somebody who was raised in the Christian tradition and maybe even studied A Course in Miracles, having the experience of Jesus coming during meditation and inviting you to come and live, you know, possibly in heaven with him, right? And I think this was very, very tempting for Sri Sarada because she loved Shiva very, very much. But she turned him down. And her awakening, I believe, if I remember correctly, came very shortly after that experience. You know, when she turned down the temptation to go and live with Shiva. Maybe someday I'll read this book again. It's a story. You know, so it's a very interesting story. And again, that's David Godman is the author. It's called No Mind, I Am the Self. But for now, I'm putting it back on my bookshelf. So we're not getting very far into MDI 1 Corinthians chapter 15 today, but let's go back and look at this first paragraph again now that we've kind of looked at all of these examples. Let me remind you of the simplicity of what I request. I do not ask you to judge which thoughts are to be laid down and which thoughts are to be kept. For such a request would keep you busy and stuck within an illusion for an eternity. Doesn't that sound a lot like what Michael Langford just said, right? That you may go into these beautiful realms, you know, because, you know, you've been promised by divine beings that this is bliss and you go there. But eventually you're going to end up right back in suffering again, right? It says that to decide between which thoughts should be kept and which thoughts should be laid down would keep you busy and stuck with an illusion for an eternity. It's really the same thing Michael Langford just said. You know, his advice, ignore everything. And that's the same advice we're getting right here in 1 Corinthians chapter 15. Let me remind you of the simplicity. How simple is that? Ignore everything. Let me remind you of the simplicity of what I request. I do not ask you to judge which thoughts are to be laid down and which thoughts are to be kept. For such a request would keep you busy and stuck within illusion for an eternity. I ask you to willingly lay down everything but your trust. This is why the symbol of an empty shell is given. Keep nothing but the casing, which is trust. In this way, you hold on to nothing that blocks out truth, and truth may be freely given and freely welcomed as it is received. And I noticed that Cheryl found the story of the yogini. You know, Cheryl, I would be fine if you just want to, we only have a few minutes left and I didn't get very far into this. Do you want to take the mic and read that story as part of the Guiding Light, since you have it? I see you've posted part of it. Let me know if you want to read it. If so, put up your hand and I'll turn the mic over to you. Sure. Okay. So Cheryl, I'm turning the mic over to you so you can read the story of the yogini to us.
I will be glad to do that. Let me go to that page, because I was trying to copy and paste it and it was giving me a hard time. Okay, so here it goes. This is a mesmerizing story that Muji tells and which you too may love and use as well. A great yogini was deep in meditation. Suddenly, beautiful and melodious sounds could be heard. I'm thinking melodious, appearing as if from nowhere and everywhere simultaneously, excuse me. It was like nothing she had ever heard. She felt, this music is truly wonderful, but it cannot be what I am, for I am here to hear it. And the music faded away. Next appeared the most exquisite color, like no painter could paint, nor could any flower display it, for it was not of this earthly realm. She thought, this is indeed astonishingly beautiful. However, it cannot be who I am, nor can it be real, for it cannot appear if I were not here to perceive it. This phenomenon, too, she ignored. Shortly afterwards, it also vanished in the presence of her deep and unmoving silence. Shortly after this, there appeared several beings shaped as if from pure light, floating through space and smiling lovingly at her in a welcoming manner. She felt profoundly touched and filled with loving emotions, but inwardly, she somehow kept her composure. How profound she felt. But this also cannot be what is the unchanging reality. For were I not here, who would see them? As soon as this insight occurred, the figures vanished. Her mind entered her heart and could no more produce any effects. A deep silence prevailed as her mind merged inside her indivisible, unconquerable, and essential being, a state known to the yogis as Nirvikalpa Samadhi. And if you could please correct me on saying that correctly, Regina, I don't know exactly the very last words I said. I didn't go to the mic.
Yeah, well, I don't know exactly those words either. I'm not the Sanskrit expert, so we'll just let it be as it is. But I think the point of the story is very, very clear. That her awakening came from her choice to ignore everything. And, you know, it's very interesting that in the story of the yogini, you know, one of the last experiences was what appeared to be divine invitation. And again, the divine invitation was trying to lure her away from meditation, right? Lure her away from her focus on the self. And if she had fallen for it, then that awakening may not have occurred. And, you know, as I'm speaking, I'm remembering Jesus's experience in the desert, right? Jesus had those temptations that came to him. Hold on one second. Let's look at how he was tempted. So I'm going to open up the Bible to Luke chapter 4. We have just a couple minutes here, so I'll do this quickly. Luke chapter 4. So the first temptation that he was brought to him was, if you are the Son of God, tell this stone to become bread. The second temptation that came to him was, I will give you all authority and splendor over the world, for it has been given to me, and I can give it to anyone I want. And the third temptation was, throw yourself from here, and the angels will try to catch you, and the angels will catch you, for it is written. So three different temptations that were given to Jesus, one having to do with the bodily hunger, one having to do with the opportunity for worldly power, and the last having to do with proving his divinity, right? So, so what this tells me is that the ego can be quite tricky in how it attempts to distract us. And so if we know that when we're in meditation, the only thing we have to know is ignore everything and focus on awareness, that's pretty easy. We don't have to be filtering through, is this a distraction or is this truth, right? Is this Jesus really now trying to invite me into something, and should I go? Should I follow this vision of Jesus, right? We don't have to do that. We don't have to figure that out. Ignore everything. Simple, simple instructions. Focus only on awareness. So next week we'll get into the second paragraph. We did all that with just one paragraph, but I think it's good. It's good for us to be aware of this. It gives us that clarity that we really need to take that straight and narrow path, right, without those distractions. So thank you, everyone, for joining with me, and we'll come back next Wednesday, and we'll continue with NTI 1 Corinthians chapter 15.